Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to our regular Monday stream.
Dare I say, we're back.
We're back.
We're back.
And we are back. We are live. We are doing okay. As those of you may or may not know, we tried to put it out on the communication platforms. We have cancelled the formal part of our Nomos event due to not being able to reorganise.
Yeah, some unforeseen logistic issues, which we can't really deal with in a time frame that we're confident in still offering it to people as the same event it was at the same price point. And we thought we would rather just kind of put our hands up and be like, you know, it's not going to work. And yeah, let people know, so at least there's some notion of certainty. I mean, we could have tried to on the fly patch things in the background, but people of course would have noticed because there'd have been different speakers.
Yeah, yeah, it would have been all
there
all
might not even been a certainty that there would have been two speakers for the evening, so we thought it best just to call it off. And as we have noted elsewhere, anyone who has purchased a ticket, the default is that your ticket will be refunded before the end of the month. If for any reason you feel you would rather support us and help us cover some of the costs we've already incurred just trying to set the event up, then feel free to email us or contact us elsewhere with your ticket number, and we will hold on to that and we'll make sure it gets put to good use.
Yes, we will. Thank you to everyone for their patience with all that, and thank you to everyone for their support. I know it's not the topic we're talking about today, but we do appreciate people who have put in some like time, effort, and also just put money forward for us to do real life events. Mm. They're not always going to pan out as we want. It's kind of it's a bit of a seat of our pants thing we do. But when stuff does not pan out, we will always make sure that people are refunded.
I am very happy that there are a subset of people who not only enjoy, obviously, the content and then coming to Nomos, but we're sort of willing to have at least a bit of foresight to be like, well, you know, this one's not worked out.
Yeah.
However, you know, keep my ticket and make sure there's another one.
Yeah, right? We'll try.
That people have, well, no, they're properly grasping the fact that if, you know, as I say, give back maybe isn't quite the right term, but if they support us, we're able to do more things. We're able to do things better. And we can be relied on to at least consistently apply what time, energy, and resources we do have to provide all sorts of stuff for people. We shall continue doing that for as long as we can.
We shall. Like I said, apologies for the lack of stream, but we have been dealing with the fallout from that stuff and also just been busy with bank holidays and family things in general. But we're trying to get back on track. It'll probably completely destroy whatever momentum we had on YouTube because YouTube's a massive treadmill. So do make sure you interact with the videos. It's a good lead in there. Make sure you press all the buttons that YouTube likes you to press just because it's the only reason you see them, really. It's real shit, but you got to play the game. And unfortunately, I'm still mildly suspicious of platforms like Rumble because it looks like they're, let's say they count views in a rather generous way, it seems. So we might use it as a backup for certain things. We might use it as a dual stream solution for people who don't want to support YouTube at all. But I'm not particularly confident, although a lot of people are quite gung-ho about it, about something like Rumble. We do also have a Odyssey that backs up automatically if we, for any reason, ever do go down. So we do have an Odyssey channel. For those of you who will seek it out, this is a Scrum Monkey channel on Odyssey. I link it occasionally, but I'm not, you know, I'd rather people see stuff in one place. This is also where you'll get the best interaction in terms of us replying to comments and things like that. So yeah, until further notice, the best place to support us is still here. A few people have, but if you guys just want to support us in general or ask some questions without us having YouTube take a cut from us, we do have a PayPal, but we are still fully monetized. Yes. So you can do super chats and all that good stuff.
Well, as we always say, a big thank you to the people who turn up for the streams and support them and share them and interact with them and whatnot, because the more you do that, the more YouTube knows you actually want to see it, and latterly it will send it to other people. But I suppose without further ado,
we're doing the preamble, but I don't know, in the UK it's been a bank holiday today. So it's been a nice relaxing one. We were at the pub early. We do occasionally post banal updates about our lives. on the social medias. So if you guys want to, all we do have links in descriptions if you guys want to talk some Telegram or Discord or whatever. But yes, we do actually have a stream today. We're not just going to waffle and chill. So we're talking kind of about stuff that we've talked about in little bits before.
Yeah.
We've done some stuff regarding the 2008 bailout before. I think the first thing I want to mention was, as a background, obviously not now, but if you guys aren't familiar with the some of the stuff we're talking about, there's some quite good ground covered on our BlackRock stream from 8 months ago. God, that's
Yeah,
quite a while ago.
we basically covered BlackRock's inception in the early 90s as Larry Fink working at the desk called Little Israel at a certain
Yeah,
bank. And
the fact that they call his desk Little Israel is hilarious. But
but
there's
he then builds his connections with people at the Fed, other large investment banks, and then essentially becomes one of the key figures who manages the repurchasing and revaluation of a number of banks and financial institutions that all went bust in 2007 and 2008,
Yeah.
which has put BlackRock in a very powerful position because, as we will sort of cover through some of the elements we've got in the stream this evening, proximity to the money printer as maybe the apex of like economic performance in the sort of managerial economy.
Yes.
And we're going to look at maybe some more choice examples recently and see how not only the way that BlackRock acted in 2008, but just in general, how policy from that period has become the norm. The
Yeah.
credit crunch was this exceptional crisis. I think we even talked about it at some point a few months ago, maybe, where we sort of suggested, what was it like the original bank bailouts in 2008, where I say were only like 80 or 90 billion at the inception. And now we had stuff like the COVID recovery loans and QE every quarter, and now they're doing like hundreds of billions, if not trillions. And it's
Yes.
just, oh, well, that's just the norm now.
That is just, this is why we did call it the infinite bailout. I know we have kind of a thing of the infinite XY, or the infinite X is kind of a stream theme because of the infinite council state, infinite crab bucket, which is a very classic stream that people do like referring to. I'll put a crab bucket in chat. Do put a crab bucket in chat if you're one of the few people able if you have a membership. Again, thank you to our members. I've noticed that's been creeping up recently. That's the main way we get financial support really from through YouTube, so that's a good one. But yeah, we have a bit of lore with the term the infinite X, but it really is a point of that this policy has become the norm when it comes to what is expected of large financial institutions as they interact with the federal government. To Rio go over some of the more relevant ground from our BlackRock stream, although this wasn't really the focus of it, was the 2008 bailouts. The Fed has been periodically asking for the help of very large institutions, the too big to fail and so big that they assist the federal government level institutions like BlackRock, every time there is a quote unquote financial exception. They are the ones really who are the functionaries. They are the ones who make the sausage. The
Well,
sausage making gets subcontracted out to people like BlackRock to fire hose the money printer money into the quote unquote most effective places.
yes, and it's all just a sort of mask and obfuscation technique so that it doesn't just become obvious that a certain subset of companies or industries are just directly piped in as much money as is required to keep them alive.
Yes. For those wondering what the euphemism of financial exception means, it means that the government's in a constant state of financial emergency where it can do what it fucking pleases.
Well, yeah, it's as soon as we recession, credit crunch,
Yeah.
double dip
Oh no, there's a
recession,
pandemic. There's, yeah.
stagflation, this, that, and then an energy crisis. Any of these possible or these situations open up the possibility for people to say, well, it's extenuating circumstances. This is something we've never seen
Yeah.
before, so we need radical new policy. Like
In these unprecedented
instead of printing
times,
100 million, we'll print 100 billion to fill the hole.
normal Keynesian neoliberalism will resume when the crisis is over. The crisis is never over.
No.
But we, I don't know, we could have called it the Infinite Crisis, but that would bring a lot of very confused Marvel fans
I think
out.
we've also done the Infinite Crisis before.
I believe so. The Crisis on Infinite Earths. No, yes. Okay. This is somewhere comic book fans are very confused. But to re-go over a bit of what BlackRock did in 2008 and also in 2020, because it's funny that one of the few articles you can find about BlackRock's very heavy involvement in the 2008 bailout process, which of course was extremely politically unpopular and toxic, and people were very confused about what actually happened until years afterwards. It took years for people to recognize BlackRock's very central role in the bailing out of Wall Street. But as they did in 2008, the BlackRock is being tapped by the federal government to stabilize the bond market for the Fed amid economic turmoil caused by the coronavirus pandemic.
Thank you, Matthew Goldstein.
Yes, thank you, Matthew Goldstein, very due. But a BlackRock subsidiary will advise the Fed on a purchase of billions of dollars in commercial mortgage-backed securities. Again, anyone who was around in 2008 will hear the term mortgage-backed securities and like shudder. If you've been paying attention to the financial markets for the past 20 years, the term mortgage-backed securities should fill you with a sense of existential dread.
Yeah. And I think like some of the other articles we looked at before with BlackRock, there are some mentions as here, oh, there needs to be more transparency. We
Yeah.
need to it needs to be more explicitly laid out what BlackRock's role is relative to the Fed, as if we couldn't all guess it anyway.
Well, the whole thing about BlackRock, we talked about it during the stream about them, is that they are both assessor and purchaser and valuer. They do all of the bits you're supposed to have separate. So as it says here, they could very much benefit from the advice they're giving because they're setting the terms of the financial market whilst also being the biggest player in it in many
Well,
areas.
go down to the paragraph here. The New York Fed said in a statement that it had selected BlackRock on a short-term basis because of its expertise in the market for commercial mortgage-backed securities, which are backed by government-sponsored mortgage finance firms Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae. Now, that's what they're doing now.
Yeah.
This is also exactly what they did in 2008.
Yeah,
And it
they.
was BlackRock who was responsible for the re-evaluations, not just of those securities, but also of the ratings agencies like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Well, one of the ironies here is that the three instances we're talking about in some detail is Silicon Valley Bank. Although I just realized I put that wrong in the title
Use
there.
SBV.
Yeah. It should be S. SVB, you guys didn't see that. You guys on the VOD will wonder what I'm talking about, but that's my dyslexia
Yeah, we're
brother.
talking about deaf American pool player who recently won the US Open, Shane Van Boning, this evening.
Silicon Valley Bank, First Republic, and Credit Suisse, which are, again, if you've been paying attention, three banks, two of which are American, one of which is a Swiss bank, that have effectively gone pop but been instantly rescued by a larger institution with government
Well,
assistance.
I believe it is mentioned that said Swiss National Bank, as it's referred to, is
Yeah.
in this very article.
Well, it's in this one, but it's also in is it
You're looking in the
UBS's?
wrong one.
Oh, sorry. Is it in this one
It's
here?
not mentioned as UBS, but it's just called Swiss National Bank,
Ah.
which we all know what
Yeah.
that is.
Swiss Bank, European Central Bank, Government Greece. He's basically talking about the whole fact that the BlackRock's advisory business is separate from its asset manager business. But yeah, they work with a whole host of central banking institutions to provide canned solutions, like a giant NGO in many ways. They also have many subsidiaries. It says that the asset management business is separate somehow, but really they don't have a firewall between them.
No.
They're, like I said, they're in a very heavy position to benefit from the advice that they give.
Well, they're separate in the way that they have the offices in different rooms in the same
Yeah.
building.
Yes, but this is not really about that, I think. The funny thing as well about this is that UBS, which is basically the Swiss central bank, in the early days of what the offloading in
This would be a bit later on, but I believe this is a write-up after the fact.
In some of the early days of the offloading and throughout the financial crisis, UBS was selling mortgages to BlackRock, and BlackRock was purchasing them in what we now know was government money. They used effectively printed money to buy back all the toxic debt from the US kind of mortgage subprime mortgage collapse.
Well, yeah, it was a fix.
Yeah.
UBS come to BlackRock and say, we've got all this toxic debt, we need to unload it, and we also need, you know, what do they say in here? We have $15 billion.
Yeah, yeah.
So BlackRock runs to the federal government and says, well, UBS needs $15 billion. You don't want those mortgage debt tranches to be worthless and go to the wrong buyer. So yes. You give us the $15 billion. We buy it off UBS at the price they've set. And then we slosh all the money about and pretend everyone's well.
That's really what happens, is that they go in there and they basically do a big fiddle and make sure that everybody gets paid and nobody stops buying American mortgage securities. Because really that would have been the natural end point of the 2007 financial crisis. Yeah.
Well, it would have been a reorientation of what mortgages are backed by.
Yeah.
They would be backed by something at least on paper tangible, as opposed to an infinite set of, you know, IOUs and, oh, well, I'm betting on this, but you're betting on my bet, and then I'm going to bet on your bet on that.
Yeah,
it all cancels out in a wash, funnily enough.
The upshot of this, and the thing that a lot of people have worked out, is that this is a very big indicator that within the US economy, there is no quote-unquote market. Mortgage-backed securities suffered a market failure so large, it nearly detonated the entirety of kind of the world stock exchange infrastructure. Mm. And yet them as a product, and subprime specifically, are still around and still a very prominent part of US housing policy. Because the idea of toxic housing debt is an idea that is too big to fail.
Yes.
Thank you for the £5 there, JD, before we move on quickly. He says, in the past 40 years, have taught us anything, it's that auditors and risk analysts are at best useless or at worst internet. Well, they spoiler alert, they definitely are internet. But thank you very much for the £5. We have our first kind of piece of news here that links in, which is, this is from March this year, but UBS very, very quickly stepped in through a story that was not very well covered before it all happened.
No.
Which again is something that we'll see here is a theme. The theme here is that a bank will collapse, no one will know about it, and quite literally overnight, before the markets open the next morning, they will have been bought out using government money, sometimes directly, like because UBS really is just a Swiss national bank.
Yeah,
it is effectively almost like a commercial bank version of what the Federal Reserve is, because it does both. But UBS swooped in to take over Credit Suisse, at 5 billion Swiss francs in losses, which is, the Swiss franc, I believe, is quite relatively strong, isn't it? So that's quite a lot.
Well, yeah, they were saying the losses in the previous one were like nearly 12 million Swiss francs for about $15 billion.
Yeah.
So you're talking about $7 or $8 billion, I think, at that point.
But the numbers,
see,
yeah.
The thing is there that they're talking about 5 billion in losses. How much debt does Credit Suisse have on top of that?
Well, debt structuring and drilling down into debt is one of the ones we'll get to when we talk about what's the other one? It's First Republic and also Silicon Valley Bank are two big ones that have a large amount of, let's say, iffy loans on their books that are a bit of a wink and a nod. But we'll see here that banks are incentivized to take out risky investment strategies.
I was going to say, were you not wanting to get the Fed graph up as well alongside this?
Oh, I will do in a second. I'm kind of leading into it.
All right.
They are out doing extremely risky deals with firms, lending them billions of dollars in some cases, hundreds of billions in others, to, again, this is where the tech bubble came from, as we'll see, to basically whoever. And it is a fiddle by the central banks, because they know that all of their risky lending will never come back to bite them. And this is a very, very classic investment of what the Austrian School refers to as malinvestment. It creates an environment where people do not have to put resources where they are best allocated for, you know, actual commercial business, for things that are sold to consumers or are sold into business. It is the unmooring further of the economic reality of the economy. And that's really the story we'll see with what we refer to as the infinite bailout. But these are further examples.
I was going to skip ahead and grab that one on my phone to see if there's anything interesting towards the end of it, but it's decided to throw an absolute hissy fit because I've tried to put an ad block on my phone.
Oh dear, oh dear.
Well, it's a shotgun merger.
it effectively is a shotgun merger. It's like a shotgun wedding of financial institutions. it's a great one. Shotgun merger engineered by the Swiss authority to avoid more market shaking turmoil. Well, this really is, they're shoving in the poison pills with the rest of the pills. They're just reabsorbing it all into larger structures, which is not a way to deal with what was referred to as toxic debt. It's not a way to deal with loans that have gone bad. It is not a way to deal with rampant lending to firms that are not viable.
Well, yeah, the thing is, they have in the headline there's 5 billion. This deal includes 100 billion Swiss francs in liquidity assistance to enable UBS, and then you can further on to the next one, to enable UBS to take over Credit Suisse. The federal government's providing a loss guarantee of a maximum 9 billion. I'd like a loss guarantee.
I'd like a loss guarantee of 9 billion francs, please. Yes, that'd be great.
Nah, I could do a loss guarantee of 200 quid a week. Sort me out.
It will be activated if losses are actually incurred on the portfolio. So again, this, it's a guarantee that no matter how much money they lose, up to 9 billion, they are just guaranteed. They have been given a blank check by the Swiss authorities. But this, a large part of this is to do with the massive, massive amounts of bond buying that the Federal Reserve has done over the last 20 years.
Well, yeah, it was the stuff we were talking about before, though. See, between 2008 and 2010, we have unprecedented financial turmoil. Global news, Ben Bernanke's, you know, up on the stage.
Ben Bernanke's out on the stage.
George Bush, help us, because we need $1 trillion to stop the world ending. And that was, you know, this was massive news. Again, unprecedented. And then, over the space of the next...
It fits with the graph perfectly.
Brilliant. But, you know, over the space of, say, 2009 to 2013, we then have another trillion on a time that wasn't unprecedented. That was just the norm. And then from 2013 to 2016, nearly, then we get another 2 trillion. And then, you know, right as 2020 happens, it then doubles from 4 to 8 trillion. It's like, well, you know, how do we even put what happened in 2008 into perspective of what we're looking at now with a ridiculous size of the numbers? It just makes no sense.
This is kind of the primary visual. This is the primary graph for the infinite bailout. If you went to a normal person on the street and you told them that the Federal Reserve, you know, someone who's relatively economically literate, who understood what the 2008 bailout was in general terms, if you went to them and you said, look, did you know that between 2013 and 2015, the federal government provided more in liquidity to the financial sector than between 2008 and 2011, they would look at you like a dog who's just been shown a card trick. They would not comprehend. But quietly, as a lot of people have not been paying attention, the financial system has been flooded with all of these reverse repos. This is effectively the graph of the Fed printing money. Because what they do is they go out, they find bonds that, you know, they feel they need to buy, and they basically just hand people masses of money, and they are effectively going on a huge shopping spree for all the financial sector's bad debt. And the argument is that eventually, you know, all of this isn't really unrealized losses because it hasn't been sold yet. The contents of the debt often isn't known when it's kept in the balance sheet. But the upshot is that all of this is the buying of bonds, assets, shares, sometimes entire institutions, with printed money.
Well, I like the way as well, in certain, they talk about it as if it's re-evaluations, it's market corrections, it's the margins, it's the finest elements. And then you realise sometimes the yearly like Fed balance sheet equates for somewhere between 30 and 40% of like total American GDP.
Yes.
You know, fair enough, I'm not one that then takes GDP as a number to be totally valid or even worthwhile in any sense. But at least by their own logic, some years, you know, we could just sort of off the cuff be like, yeah, a third of the economy was literally printed in the last 12 months.
Well, the most perverse aspect of this is the fact that the Fed's balance sheet has often been advertised, especially in its early years, as something that could and should be negative.
Yes.
That they should actually be out there effectively doing the reverse and lending money to people to kind of against their bonds. So they are effectively taking stuff, liquidity out of the market. But that never happens, as you can see with this graph. There is never a period of properly sustained liquidation of the balance sheet. It ballooned between 2013 and 2015. It came down a small amount between 2018 and 2019 because it was just so high. And then once again, as another exception hits, as we talk about it, as there is another emergency, it just goes to the moon again. And it makes the 2008 financial crisis look like, you know, spilled tea at a picnic.
Yep.
It is four times the size of the jump. It is insane, and if you weren't aware of this, these numbers should scare you. But I'm sure a lot of you are quite literate in terms of like Fed balance sheet stuff by now. I know a lot of you are the econ readers and Austrian econ readers especially. But this is just a great illustration of the permanent life support the American economy is on through printed dollars.
Well, it's the global economy, really.
Yeah, the global economy. The Fed through the dollar as the reserve currency. And through American, effectively economic imperialism, sets the level of liquidity globally and also pressures other financial institutions to follow suit, mostly because if they did this alone, they would crash and burn. Mm. Everyone else is forced to follow, effectively at gunpoint in many cases. But that's a stream for another time. We'll have a lot about how some of that works in smaller countries when we get to some more of the geopolitical stuff. But here's one you wanted to talk about. Is it's not only dollars that come from the Federal Reserve. It is policy.
Yes.
UBS especially is somebody who is very in on providing the faux emergency assistance for Ukraine, which really is just a giant money laundering exercise.
But
everyone who's got their brain switched on knows that all of this, one, isn't real, and two, is a massive money laundering exercise.
Yeah. Just the fact that it's obviously this sinister thing called Project Hope.
Yeah.
It's all to do with immigration and refugees and what have they got in the lower right-hand side of the list? Is it assessments of gender-based or conduct gender-based violence response and prevention program?
Yeah, what does gender-based violence have to do with being a central bank?
Yeah, he was also a central bank as well, heavily connected to the Fed, and we know that geopolitical policy and economic strategy do sort of go hand in hand for the most part.
Yes, they do.
So it's interesting that they go to say, oh, Project Hope has a long history in the region. It first began working in Ukraine in 2002 on drug use prevention, HIV prevention, and education for children in primary schools. From 2002 to 2012, Project Hope released to help to decrease the burden of TB and lower TB morbidity and mortality in Ukraine. So they're working on education, they're working on sexual health clinics, they're working on vaccine clinics for TB, and they've been at that since 2002. So what they mean to tell us is they've been subverting Ukraine from the inside for the last two decades using institutions like UBS and charitable projects like Project Hope.
Yeah, it's very, very clear once you get into an opaque economy and region like the Ukraine is in terms of corruption that all of this money, for, you know, it's basically like the Toys for Starving Orphans shite.
Yeah.
It's the American Dreamers bill that finances drone strikes. It's everything like that. It's perfect international policy via international financial institutions. I just think this is a great illustration of the fact that there must be hegemony. It's not like UBS is just a money funnel. It's also a regime mouthpiece.
Well,
it has to be.
Yeah, it has to be. And it's the thing we've covered before as well, is that so much of this philanthropy and do-gooding, especially in one of the big ways, the environmental stuff, is really all just a method to consolidate the situation as it is just now.
Yes. This is the most recent and most high-profile bank collapse in the past week. Well, past couple of weeks. Is the First Republic Bank, because there was some wobbles for a while, but there was not much reporting on it. The first many people have heard of First Republic's troubles is when they were bought out. But Google has a feature where you can go back and search before certain dates. And I was quite shocked about how little there was. You know, this is from the Commercial Observer.
Well, yeah,
it's not like CNN was talking about this, really. Even in the wake of Silicon Valley Bank, there was a few people who talked about, well, what about First Republic Bank? And there was a large poo-pooing of the fact that this could be, quote-unquote, financial contagion. The idea that other banks would fail as a result was posited as nonsense. And yet we've seen another bank effectively fail as a result. They talk about here, why the spotlight in First Republic? Banks exposed to tech, CRE causes concern. And really what they're talking about is the fact that First Republic is a lot like Silicon Valley Bank.
We're not an archive.
Doesn't actually say a huge amount else. It basically just says that Silicon Valley Bank and First Republic are similar in that they are small banks. They aren't banks that are particularly well regarded in terms of being, quote unquote, too big to fail, even though they have been absorbed now by larger financial institutions. And yeah, they had a massive, they had a 62% stock drop and then had to admit the fact that they had effectively had a run on the bank in the last few weeks that was completely, almost completely unreported on. The fact that they'd had a tremendous deposit run, some of which was linked to people who were having big losses from their crypto portfolio, which is another aspect of this we may talk about a little bit later on. Although I don't want to turn this into a crypto stream. But this is the first many people heard about First Republic Bank's troubles. Because, like I said, they were likened to Silicon Valley Bank at first. But a lot of that, again, was hand-waved away. I know, do you want to quickly go over this?
Well, we'll just carry through into the article if you want.
Yeah, sure. Multi-billion dollar rescue deal for First Republic Bank.
A group of big US banks has injected $30 billion into a smaller regional First Republic, which has been seen as a risk of failure. The move came as authorities in the US...
This is from March again, by the way. This isn't the failure of the bank.
No,
them coming in and fire-hosing money into it to try and prevent it falling over.
Yes.
And it wasn't enough.
They're trying to quell panic over the health of the banking system after a series of bank collapses. Worries about the sector have spread globally, raising a fear of a crisis. Oh, no.
Well, I think when banks are collapsing in fast sequence at a larger rate than during the 2008 financial crisis, I think you can already say that you're in some form of banking crisis.
Yeah. Report of plans for the aid from the 11 banks led by JP Morgan and Citigroup. Citigroup, who we know, worked hand in hand with BlackRock. And basically allowing itself to be repurchased to some extent and reevaluate its whole sort of asset portfolio at one point. Helped lift financial markets and sent shares in First Republic surging more than 20% at one point.
Triggering trading. It's kind of funny that they
dead
were able
cat
to...
bounce.
Yeah, they were able to... That's a very short-term example of like malinvestment.
Mm.
They created a market signal that was completely false. The San Francisco-based firm had seen its share price plunge only 70% over the last week as investors worried it was the next big bank at risk of a rush of customers withdrawing their deposits.
Mm.
Again, this is really an indictment of fractional reserve banking.
Well, I'd see someone in chat saying, any idea if more banks are going to go boom soon? Well, here's the trick.
They
are all already bust.
Yeah, the banks are already bust and it only matters when you look at their balance sheets. The big thing with Silicon Valley Bank and First Republic, as we'll get onto in some subsequent streams, is this is not about the market allowing bad banks to fail. What's happening here is that toxic debt from the tech sector is being wound up, packaged away, so you do not talk about it anymore.
Yes.
Once these financial institutions are absorbed and bailed out... no one really talks about what was on their balance sheet anymore. It's like, well, oopsie doopsie, that went wrong, but the federal government saved us, so let us never speak of it again. That was the big trick with 2008 as well. People didn't really talk about all the legislative malfeasance. They didn't talk about the fact that the bond market was very obviously being rigged at the behest of the federal government, and the federal government was in on it with the regulators, and that the more regulation you have, actually, just the more you're able to manipulate the market. Because not everyone is a financial Boy Scout, and to believe in like government-led financial regulation is to believe that people aren't capable of colluding and lying. That's not us being paranoid once again. That is a well known fact of what happened in 2008, the rating agencies were in on it, and they were just rubber stamping massive amounts of junk debt, which is what happens in basically every financial institution now. All debt in American banks is effectively subprime debt because of the way that the Federal Reserve balance sheet makes them able to carry out massive amounts of lending that they just... It's not that they can't back it up with the way fractional reserve banking is. It's just that they are making bad bets on bad businesses that would fail otherwise. Mm. But that's the only way to keep the show going when it's based on infinite liquidity. I talk about risk of contagion and the fact that they're shearing up here. Here's a big picture of fucking Janet Yellen, who should really be in like weird Maoist-style propaganda.
Yeah,
she
probably
is one of the more powerful people in the world. Before I get any further, there's a couple of good comments and donations from Glow in the Dark. Thank you very much for the two sets of $5. He says, we have perception. Finance people think it is okay, so we keep it that way, which will lead to consolidation and government-backed or owned markets. Well, we're already there in many cases. Buy bad security funds and spend your way out of debt with printed cash while forcing others to go along with it. What could go wrong? Buy high, sell low.
Well, pretty much.
Yeah, it's a whole way though of propping up in the quote unquote real economy businesses which have already failed.
Mm.
We talk about large balance sheets here. We talk about the fact that there has been, you know, $30 billion in liquidity injected into it. Really, that is just them throwing good money after bad.
It's funny that because if you scroll down again to that picture of Janet Yellen, I believe there's a comment from her there about, oh, you know, we felt there was a serious risk of contagion that could have brought down and triggered runs on many banks. It's like, well, the contagion happened decades ago.
Yeah.
And it was toxic debt, malinvestment, and general sort of fiat money-based policy where you have to print to meet the GDP and so on and so forth. So these things just don't... It was never going to work. This whole notion that now it's failing is just... is a complete sort of fugazi, as it were.
It is a fugazi, it's a gazi. It's... Again, we'll go back to this image, which is just... This is not a healthy American economy. This is not an American economy that has stood on its own since the financial crisis. Mm. I'd argue it's not an American economy which has stood on its own since the Federal Reserve in most cases.
No.
But this is just the most dramatic example of it. That they talk about contagion and, you know, the cheering up markets, but if you need to be in a situation of infinite bailout, you don't have a viable banking system.
No.
And if the Western world doesn't have a viable banking system, that can only limp on for so much longer. That's why we talk about this stuff. We're not just having a moan about the bankers. This is something that will lead to, at some point, a catastrophic collapse, because you cannot fight reality. I'll put our collapse watch back on there. But well, this was them back in March. You know, both of those we talked about. This was them trying to shear up First Republic Bank. Let's see this. There we go. Sorry. We saved First Republic Bank. Why First Republic Bank collapse? This is a mere, I believe, 3 weeks later?
Yes.
This is 3 weeks after the bank has been handed $30 billion and everyone's patted each other and themselves on the back and gone around and said that they've saved the financial system. This is a Wall Street Journal article. It's a bit of a limited hangout, but it does have a few key points here. It failed to reckon with the impact of rising interest rates, which sent its strategy of relying on wealthy depositors into reverse. Again, there's the whole thing of interest rates and inflation and the fact that we've had effectively negative interest rates for such a long time.
How can they be relying on deposits? There is no reserve requirement anymore.
There is no reserve requirement. They're a fractional reserve bank, as all banks are. Therefore, they can't rely on deposits.
Yeah.
No bank relies on deposits. So that sentence right there, as you correctly point out, is a nonsense. Do you want to read a little bit of this?
Yeah, we can if you want. There were some bits towards the end I thought were a bit addressed, but we'll get our way there.
Sure. Just a bit of preamble, yeah, then you
Jim
can
Jim Herbert, the bank's 78-year-old founder, using a reassuring presence, slammed his hand on the table during an all-hands meeting. We've got to get more deposits, he said. This is before the March banking panic that toppled two of First Republic's peers, Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. Its troubles only worsened after that. Early Monday morning, regulators seized First Republic and struck a deal to sell the bulk of its operations to JP Morgan and Chase, the largest bank in the country. So it just, oh, they just struck a deal. They seized it and then struck a deal.
I love that sentence there. Regulators seized First Republic Bank. Federal regulators went in and seized the bank and then forcibly sold it to JP Morgan, a bank that it has direct relationships with going back to Roosevelt, as in Teddy Roosevelt.
Yes.
If you guys watch the marketization streams, you'll know that JP Morgan and the Rockefellers being in competition with each other is part of what fueled quote-unquote progressive era politics originally. And a lot of the meatpacking industry panics and all that stuff was manufactured to benefit one or the other.
Mm.
It's been going on for a very, very long time. And the Federal Reserve is the main way it's facilitated. But First Republic Bank is seized, sold to JP Morgan in second largest ever US bank failure. they're kind of burying the lead there, but it was already reported. But this is them doing a bit of a post-mortem. But the big event that happened was that, you know, First Republic, federal government takes it, just basically gives it to JP Morgan.
Collapse of First Republic marks the second biggest bank failure in US history. Is that inflation adjusted or not? It also spells the end of what was considered one of the most successful strategies in banking, luring wealthy depositors and giving them five-star service. I will say, I noticed that later on in this article, there is a mention of the fact that in some way, shape or form, they were prioritizing depositors that were putting in more than $250,000, which means it's not covered by FDIC insurance on deposits.
Yeah.
And I believe as well, for a bank to be holding that amount of money, they then have to pay more interest on it themselves, which means they were the only bank in the world that actually had cash in it, by the sounds of it.
Possibly. Well, it feels like that part of their business is what was the bad part. First Republic's undoing was triggered by the Federal Reserve's rapid series of interest rate increases, which led depositors to seek better returns elsewhere. That's not strictly true, because, again, First Republic's balance sheet is larger than its deposits, as all fractional reserve banks are. So the idea that a run on deposits is what would sink a bank that has revenue from lending that is far in excess of that. Effectively, First Republic, if their business model is correct, they could operate, as most banks do, without any liquidity in the current environment. That's what all this money printing is meant to have you able to do.
The next point there as well is that, obviously, interest rates are going up.
Yeah.
That meant it had to pay more to keep them just when rising rates were battering the value of its mortgage portfolio. But if interest rates go up, people are paying more for their mortgage, and in theory, the mortgage is worth more. So why would that make the mortgage portfolio as a whole worth less?
If interest rates go up, surely you can also charge more for debt.
Mm.
That's generally why it's not seen as completely killer to the banking sector. Thank you, RCW, for £5. He just says, you guys should just review government papers 24/7. Well, if someone wants to pay us to do that, they can do. But
yeah,
as it stands,
feel free. Get in touch.
Yeah, as it stands, I have to work, and Evelyn has to look for work at the moment.
I'm trying. I've got an interview on Tuesday.
You've got an interview, yeah. But it's... if someone wants to pay us just to look at government papers, we can do. But the whole point of this, and it's infuriating, is that this Wall Street, not Wall Street Journal, sorry, that it is a Wall Street Journal article, is basically pretending that banks rely on depositors' cash, which is completely not true.
No.
That has not been the case since really before the Great Depression. In fact, the banks no longer relying on depositors' cash is what caused the Great Depression. It's the kind of thing that, you know, fractional reserve banking is the kind of thing that most, I guess, economically literate people should at least be somewhat aware of. And the idea that within that framework, you know, a depositor run can destroy a bank that has other sound commercial interests does not hold water.
No.
Banks do not operate on your deposits. It is a complete fiction to say that.
Well,
they
talk about they're opening branches in rich suburbs and upscale urban areas. The money is on the services. The real money is made when you do what BlackRock does, you do what JP Morgan does, you act as a mediator between policy and sort of financial outcomes. The idea that there's any sort of profit, loss, or anything like that in between is just strange to me.
Yeah, it talks about First Republic Bank, price to tangible book value ratio. JP Morgan Chase. It's the whole First Republic once traded at a higher valuation than JP Morgan, which would show you just how batty it is. But the thing with JP Morgan is it is seen as a very well established, too big to fail institution. It can just go out and absorb all of these. Where do you want to go to?
Keep going down here. In July 2021, the bank named Miss Erkan 43, who previously worked at Goldman Sachs Group Inc., as co-CEO. It's under... It's quite a bit further down, I think.
There it is.
Yeah. Yes. As the bank announced, Mr. Herbert would take medical leave due to heart issues. Then Erkan left the bank less than a month later. First Republic interviewed top executives from other banks for open CEO job. People familiar with the matter. It wound up elevating longtime insider Michael Roffler. And then I noticed as well, right towards the bottom, unless there's anything in this you really want to cover.
Not really.
If we go right down to the bottom, the last few paragraphs, we've got obviously the summation here. As part of the deal reached Monday morning, JP Morgan said it will assume all of First Republic's $92 billion in deposits, insured and uninsured. It's also buying most of the bank's assets, including $173 billion in loans and $30 billion in securities. The FDIC will share losses with JP Morgan on First Republic's loans. Again, there's your guaranteed loss prevention.
Well, that's the whole thing in that they're brushing over First Republic's loans. Mm. They're brushing over what is the bulk of its balance book, because is it a fractional, as a fractional reserve bank, it lends out more money than it has in deposits.
Yes.
So $173 billion in loans is what has sunk First Republic. It is not to do with their deposit-to-loan ratio.
Well, yeah, and they've got this lovely little tidbit for the second to last paragraph. The Oregon Jewish Community Foundation banked First Republic for years. Last week, the non-profit started moving all of its deposit accounts to Bank of America, said David Foreman, president and CEO. Even though its balances were under the deposit insurance limit, the organization didn't want to deal with the potential hassle of having money stuck at a failed bank, he said. I'm surprised they could hear him over the sound of palms massaging one another.
Why would they put that in there? That's so weird. That's like something I'd put in an article. It's like a weird flex about, yeah, we all knew this was coming. Anyway. But it's the false naivety that gets me. Will JP Morgan's bailout of First Republic finally bring a halt to contagion in the banking sector? Well, we'll see you when the next bank fails. I just thought this one was funny.
Yeah, well, this is because we had sort of queued up this as a stream for last week, and then sort of other things happened, and we kind of thought, nah, we'll leave it be. And as we left it be, this basically cropped up like the next day, and I just thought we'll look back on this because it just I think there's already been stuff from last week to now that has indicated that, like, no, the contagion has not stopped.
Well, the whole point I want to get into here is that there's, when we look at First Republic as a microcosm of the banking sector, the problem with it is that it was never a going concern to begin with.
No.
If your business model, as the business model of all major US banks, is based on for the interest rates being negative forever, if your business model is based on the constant reverse repo of debt from the Federal Reserve that is unsustainable, at some point, some of them are either going to be allowed to fail, as this kind of was, or just bought up, as this was. They've kind of done both here, in that JP Morgan came in, the government seized it literally overnight, the night it collapsed, like what happened with Credit Suisse to UBS. It was exactly the same situation between JP Morgan, which effectively is a government organization, and First Republic.
So I'm reading through other bits of this LBC one just to see if there's anything at the end. And I'm just noticing, like, misspellings. Like, this So the article's been up for, what, 5 days?
Yeah.
And they've still just got, like, really blatant typos in it.
Well, I just think that people are reacting like it is business as usual in the banking sector. Mm. There is a large soothing voice here. You know, will the bailout finally bring a halt to the contagion? There's not headlines being like, mass financial crisis, 2008 on steroids. Look at the state of the Fed's balance sheet. We're all fucked. There was a lot of pushing previously of a financial crisis, of the idea that this is coming. But it was really the control of expectation. I think them pushing the idea of a wider collapse, and then it really, in the eyes of the public, being smaller banks, being, you know, stumbling and being picked up by larger banks. I think a lot of people are kind of going, oh, is this all it is? Oh, that's, oh, well, a small bank got bought by a big bank, and I'm not quite sure what this all means. It really is the, we've talked about conspiracy jacketing, but this is the normality jacketing of the exception. As I talked about during the intro, this is a perfect example of when emergency measures become permanent policy and eventually are regarded as normality.
What we need to do is we need to phone the Bogdanovs.
Yeah.
But they are gone and they cannot save us anymore. There cannot be the phone call that saves Europe. Rothschilds hate him.
There's a couple of bits I want to gloss over here before we go into a bit of a wider discussion here. There was another bank called Silvergate, which was a crypto-focused bank that failed back in January.
This is obviously part of some of the other elements we'll touch on in this and in future streams, where a lot of this easy Fed money seems to just be fire-hosed into a digital currency and digital payment infrastructure for one reason or another.
Well, there's just a great pipeline here. If US bank Silvergate hit with $8 billion in crypto withdrawals. I know there's a lot of people complaining that they can't set up these independent crypto banks, but that's just because they're independent, not because they're crypto banks. It's the independent part they don't want. Consumers of US bank Silverdale, which provides cryptocurrency services, have withdrawn over $8 billion. Again, in terms of deposits, that's actually quite a lot, especially from a single sector, which is showing the amount of money that has been pumped into this. Again,
yeah, around 2/3 of the bank's customers pulled their deposits in the final 3 months of 2022, which means all sorts of money was thrown into this thing, and then the folk who knew what was actually going on just ripped everything back out of it before it really died a death.
Well, someone says can't have competition for government coin. Well, the crypto sector effectively now is government coin,
yeah,
because of the amount of money sloshed into fintech. All of these startups are
gonna,
in one way or another, funded by the Federal Reserve.
Are we going to have to get like that Fed sheet,
yeah,
like the money printing, and then just lay over like the Bitcoin like price index over that?
Well, it's very funny that the wider banking crisis is mirrored exactly by what was supposed to be the robust and separate crypto marketplace.
Mm.
That one for one, they have taken the same trajectory at almost the same time.
Yes.
There's one here from Forbes, which just talks about Bitcoin survived SVB and Silvergate bank fails. It will survive First Republic's too. And it, again, this is very Bitcoin cope. First Republic's no more, blah, 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 price fell. Undertaker of cryptocurrencies. It's the whole thing about the fact that they're really talking about the fact that crypto is on like financial life support.
The folks, scroll up for a second there. Yeah. The future of crypto is being decided now. Enico Nor, the co-founder of the Hong Kong-based financial firm Stabilot and the Bitcoin-backed stablecoin USB,
told me in an interview. Yeah,
what's the whole point of the thing is that the value is meant to fluctuate. How could you have something that is Bitcoin-backed, but also stable? Unless, of course, you have some reason to believe that from now on into the future, Bitcoin will have some kind of stable and or guaranteed price for some reason.
Well, the thing is, you ask people about that, and especially crypto people, start explaining to you like they're explaining a mortgage-backed security, which is very funny. Signature Bank's failure, in the view of many crypto investors, was less about the bank's viability and more about limiting the on-off ramps of the institution's digital asset investors.
Says Jahan Jamili, CEO of American
Crypto Academy
and co-founder of Sarsen Funds, a cryptocurrency investment advisor. Scroll up again a second.
There he is.
Yeah. This failure I was almost going to do it in like the voice of the guy for the phone jacker thing about the downloadings. Your cryptoings, they are valuings, they are loanings. The failure may have a limiting effect on Wall Street's continued participation in crypto, but it might also have the reverse effect, an increased demand among retail crypto investors who might rush into Bitcoin, fearing increased restriction to purchasing.
It's really them. Well, the problem is that, again, we'll get into this, some of the asset sheet stuff later, but banks like Silvergate,
Do you see somebody in chat?
Digital Pajuka.
Diogenes holds up a monkey.jpg. Behold, an asset.
That's one that we applaud you. That's a great one.
Thank you, Excess of
But
Liberty.
Silvergate got massive amounts of assistance from kind of angel investor stuff. It was just sloshed full of money by the rest of the financial system.
Yes. I mean, we've covered so many things of that now, the
Well,
crypto tokens, carbon tax tokens, ones that are tied into rewilding or food or anything. These are all projects that just seem to be funneled all of this sort of money.
again, in the wake of the failure of the bank, Bob Diamond, which he's a former boss of Barclays, says digital currencies to have very
He
important
wouldn't have
place in
happened to be a
finance.
boss of Barclays during the LIBOR rate scandal, would he?
I think he was. Former Barclays boss expects stable coins, specifically stable coins, to flourish in future. And we keep saying it because stable coins are training for central bank digital currency.
Yes.
They will be sold to you as the ultimate stable coin. The ultimate stable coin is backed by the
Yeah.
Fed.
Digital currencies will have a very important place in finance, according to veteran banker Bob Diamond, even as last year's market carnage thwarted his plan to take stablecoin group Circle public. The former Barclays chief executive told the Financial Times there's going to be a lot of good things that survive last year's crypto's crash. His comment comes only weeks after the abandoned attempts to list Circle, which runs the world's second largest stablecoin at a $9 billion valuation in New York, owing to poor investor demand. Diamond has been one of the most prominent traditional financiers in crypto. His private equity group, Atlas Merchant, invested in Circle in 2021 and set up a special purpose acquisition company for the corporate float.
This should tell you all you need to know about the markets and the fact
Yes.
that crypto is part of the infinite bailout. It is not an alternative to it. I just want to kind of cut this off at the knees here, that they are hand in glove, the same system and done by the same people, and it has the same exposure to the whims of the money printer.
Yeah, there was any sort of pretenses that this man is not an absolute shyster and would otherwise be covered in an article with his behaviour in Barclays Bank as basically a villain, because that's what he is.
Well, one of the things as well I did want to talk about is the angle to do with what I've been kind of calling like the shadow economy, but
Yes.
really it is the end result of the money printer. We'll do a stream on this stuff in detail, but I don't want to re-go over too much stuff about why Silicon Valley Bank, which I can't seem to spell, Silicon Valley Bank failed.
Because we know that the whole premise here is the fact that there are no successful, functioning, profitable banks because their function is preceded on the fact that it will just do as is required by policy. It has nothing to do with markets or economic activity or investment in the things that are valuable. It's about achieving wider managerial policy. And that is why we have this example in front of us here of organizations like Daily Pay getting $260 million in funding. I can't remember if this one comes from is Silicon Valley Bank, Barclays again, some guy called Angelo Gordon, and a fund managed by Neuberger Berman. Daily Pay first announced a $300 million revolving credit facility from Barclays in March 2022. The additional revolving credit facility capacity, 100 million provided by Barclays, 60 from Angelo Gordon, provides Daily Pay with more capital to service its ever-growing roster of clients. The 100 million in term loan funding will be invested to fuel Daily Pay's continued product innovation and to accelerate growth. Because of course, in the managerial economy. There is no profit. Well, there is no loss. There is only growth.
Fintech firms like this are where the money printer money goes.
Yes.
This is from January 2023. And even as Silicon Valley Bank was in deep, deep crisis right through the end of last year into this year, they were still lending out tens and hundreds of millions to these fintech firms that do not make any money. Here we go. Liberia secures $30 million in debt financing from Silicon Valley Bank, January 2023. I just went through 1 month. This is just in January. This is...
Any more details about what Liberis actually do? I know the...
I'm not really sure.
Daily P1...
Embedded business finance platform. They're basically like one of these bullshit inter-business embedded things that doesn't...
Enabling higher volumes of loan origination as opposed to organization for its business partners. Comparing acquirers, brokers, PSP. Yeah, so it's like internal digital pay stuff.
Yeah, it's nuts and bolts. We're not quite sure what this widget does, fintech.
Yeah, we're going to develop a accountancy software that basically is just like a spreadsheet with a fancy UI on the front of it in the hopes that the government of some Western nation pays us $100 billion to adopt the system.
All this is why you see the My Day at Uber videos or yes. My Day at Google videos. This is the macro level, high level economics that allows people to have these 250k a year fake jobs. That is where the money printer goes. It is fired out by banks like Silicon Valley Bank, which was a debt trap and was deliberately allowed to fail in a cushioned way so people would not look at all of the ridiculous things on what's referred to here as its mythical balance sheet.
Well, I was going to say, it's like the perfect way to wrap up all of these loose ends in one go. You take all your... bored, you know, useless, skillless millennials and zoomers that have graduated with whatever horrendous corporate business studies, finance, management degree, entrepreneurship, whatever nonsense they call it. You take all the fake money you've printed and you smash them both together so that those people think they're changing the world, man. And what they're really doing is just developing different arms that the security state has wanted for years anyway.
Well, Silicon Valley Bank, as a supposedly small bank, was able to have a lending sheet to the order of $74 billion. That's billion with a B, folks. Well, the whole thing about Silicon Valley Bank is that you could get money as anyone. If you were a Silicon Valley insider... with an app that tracks people's farts, you could go to Silicon Valley Bank and say, can I have $10 million in credit facility, please? And they would go, sure, you can have $10 million in credit facility. We're a wacky bank. We get the free Fed money. We don't give a shit. as private credit investors comb through the $74 billion loan portfolio of Silicon Valley Bank, they are finding vast portions that are not at all appealing. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation is auctioning the loan book and other parts of the California lender after a bank run led to its collapse this month. No, what led to its collapse is investing in the equivalent of the juice squeezing machines.
Yeah, like credit.
These are the angel investors who invest in all of this tech bullshit that you hear getting like $500 million in funding.
Here's what the credit investors are focused on: about $10 billion to $12 billion worth of loans that SVB had made to companies such as Doctor's Office Network, Oak Street Health, Robotics Group, Automation Anywhere, and FinTech Group, Daily Pay, which companies help pay their employees daily.
Yeah.
The remainder of the book is a smattering of pieces including $1.2 billion of loans to wineries, $10.5 billion of loans to clients of its private bank, predominantly mortgages and home equity lines of credit, and listen to this line. A relatively small $2.6 billion business of lending to commercial real estate project. A relatively small $2.6 billion.
Yeah, 2.6 lending to commercial real estate projects. Could that be, clones of things like WeWork, for example?
Pretty much.
there's all kinds of stuff. But yeah, there is this mythical enormous loan book, said one person. It's complicated because it's huge. Everyone is scurrying around looking for a partner. Or needs an insurance arm. The loan book is just one part of the sale. The FDIC is orchestrating. It also looks to find a buyer for SVB's private bank. Separately, advisors to SVB's parent company, SVB Financial, which filed for bankruptcy protection last week, are seeking bidders for its investment bank and venture capital investment arm. But even the financial like wonks themselves are just describing the fact that Silicon Valley Bank, as the wink and a nod lender to all the wacky tech bubble shit, like this is the tech bubble. This is the 74, this is where it all came from. The Federal Reserve gives Silicon Valley Bank a ridiculous amount of money from the money printer. It then goes out and funds the tech class.
Yeah, that small loan of $2.6 billion, literally the Trump.
Yeah. They then go out and they make all of this liquidity happen in a marketplace that is not real. And they deliberately undertake massive amounts of malinvestment that even companies like BlackRock would blush at.
Someone else is making the point that we're about to get onto. They were the same people funding all the crappy rage bait websites. Exactly.
Yes, they are.
Because when you really get into it, you realise that all you need to do is really say Snopes.
Yeah.
And you have like the underlying network you could use to connect both the media and finance complex. Like that is the intermediary where almost all of these people seem to wash back and forth.
This is Forbes that did a quick one saying Silicon Valley Bank's demise tightened spigot on $30 billion of venture lending. But like I said, all the lending has already happened. Those loans have already out. They're not being caught back in. The Federal Reserve isn't going out and going, you know, fart tracking app people. That $10 million's ridiculous. Why have you got that? Give it back.
Yeah. In 2017, when David Raby launched Tovala, very successful company, you must have heard of
it. Which pairs a smart oven with a food delivery service. The idea is a little crazy.
But of
then
course,
came the pandemic and the
must
ideas,
be a successful business. Because have you heard of Tovala?
Yeah.
I've got Tovala everywhere. Tovala coming at my ears. He's raised around $100 million for the Chicago-based business and also borrowed a few million dollars in venture debt from SVB.
Oh, just a few million.
As an alternative to selling pieces of the company. That have allowed him to expand Tovala, which now employs 350 and has three food facilities in Illinois and Utah. $100 million investment.
Smart ovens.
For 350 employees.
Is that where they're going to get put now, the smart ovens?
Oh, no.
How many ready meals can you cook with two smart ovens?
Rabbi is just one of many entrepreneurs who took out venture debt from Silicon Valley Bank. The failed bank was the largest issuer of it.
There we go, yeah. The failed bank was the largest issuer of it. They are the ones who took, like, venture debt is, it's the new way of not having, like, venture capital is like, right, I'm going to give you 100 grand and I'm going to have, like, 70% of your business. Fuck you. What this does is, this allows even wackier shit to happen because you aren't selling a bit of your company.
They got to say it ranges from 7 to 12%. This is by the interest rates on the venture debt itself, plus warrants that allowed the lender to gain a small equity stake in the business. Since the collapse of SVB last weekend, founders and investors have raised many questions about what might happen to their existing debt. As panic spread during the run on the bank, founders who'd taken out venture debt with SVB worried that if they took their money out of the bank, they could be in violation of loan covenants require them to keep the cash there. Now some wonder who might buy the debt. Private equity firms including Apollo Global Management have been reported to be interested, ultimately wind up with a minority stake in their business. It's a little uncomfortable that you're spending investor updates to a mystery player, says Matt Michelson, founder and CEO of Smalls, a high-end cat food startup. That was all worth it for the punchline. I didn't even know it was coming.
That's a great punchline. High-end cat food startup. But no, but the venture debt is, like, that is a deliberate bad loan business.
It's like...
Venture debt.
Tech squared.
Yeah, venture debt is a terrible idea and could only have been cooked up in collaboration with Silicon Valley Bank as a way to deliberately create bad loans to keep the tech going.
Somebody saying Matt Michelson needs to be sent to the mines. No, he needs to be put in a Tovala smart oven.
Yeah, we'll put him in a Tovala smart oven and we'll put some delicious tech ready meals in with
him. Feed him to the strays.
Yeah. Gourmet ready meals to put in your fucking tech oven. That really says it all. High-end cat food and smart ovens is where all this $30 billion has gone. They have pissed it away on fake jobs with fake companies.
Here's another one here as well. Understand how cheap this money once was. I mean, that's them taking the fucking piss, isn't it?
Yeah.
Cheap money. Of course it's cheap money because it comes direct from the Fed. Consider the case of Rajat Bagheera, founder and CEO of Chef Robotics. So he's an Indian man that runs a robotics company that is in no way a scam.
Yeah.
He took out a $2 million debt facility with SVB in December 2021, an interest rate of just 50 percentage points above prime, which is then 3.25%, an extraordinarily low cost of capital for a robotics startup. Obviously, prime has changed quite a bit, he says. At that point, it was extraordinarily low, and it was like, how in the world are we getting this?
even the scamming tech budgets are like, this debt seems really cheap. What's going on?
Oh.
When a Pajit running a scam startup is starting to worry about your lending rates.
Michelson, the cat food CEO, has raised about $30 million in equity and has a $4 million debt facility with SVB. He says he's rethinking his company's financing in the wake of the SVB failure. When the bank run began, he says, we were getting a lot of pressure from our investors to take our money out, but he worried that the loans would be in default. When he finally tried to get cash out, the transfers failed due to the surge in demand. That's now in the past. The experience has caused him to rethink. Because what, he's still selling fucking...
He's still selling high-end cat food to cat ladies.
Sachets of
this is
cat
too
food.
Perfect. Again, it feels like they know. Where's the Jewish community groups in this one?
I'd scroll to the bottom just in case
there
isn't.
Are there anyone here? Ah, there's none here. Ah, wait. It's just the next big question, as always, when it comes to financing, is risks and costs. It's expensive right now because people are risk-averse. No. Things have defaulted closer to where they should be because no one should have ever been given this money, ever.
Yes.
The idea of venture loans is a terrible... It is literally throwing money at people's ideas and not even asking to own them. It is ridiculous in how it creates tech-based malinvestment and also just creates so much liquidity for bullshit. This is the tech bubble.
Oh, Rajput, what do we do? By Shiva's are we are screwed, my friend.
the last thing we just want to go through is kind of a lead-in and a little bit of a conclusion, because we do have some like takeaway points here as well. But as kind of a conclusion is the fact that Vice Media, despite not being a financial institution, effectively gets treated like one.
Yes.
Here we go. Here's back on May 3rd, 2019, because Vice Media has been in a state of effective collapse through most of its existence. It has never made money, as none of these places do. Silicon Valley Bank was never a going concern. Vice Media was never a going concern. None of the financial institutions are a going concern. They exist because of the size of the Fed's balance sheet. Because they are buying back all the toxic debt. But anyway, Vice Media gets $250 million in debt funding from George Soros, other investors. This is from Variety. Variety seems to have like weird... red pill dog whistle.
Well,
that'll
be because they are probably part of a conglomerate that is at least in some ways angled against Vice.
Yeah. Vice Media is looking to revitalize its flagging business. It's gotten $250 million in cash infusion from an investment consortium that includes billionaire George Soros. The company's new debt financing was led by 23 Capital, a financing firm focused exclusively on sports, music, and entertainment sectors, with participation by the Soros Fund Management, Fortress Investment Group, Monroe Capital, as first reported by the Wall Street Journal. I believe as well that the owner of Snopes is involved in this,
yes,
through all of it. I think actually he's, as we'll move on to here, the one of the people who's moved in for this £400 million sale. Because what happened is, Vice declared bankruptcy, everyone cheered and went, go woke, go broke, and then farted all over the place. And then Vice was, I don't know, it's a bit of a cheesy one, but look, I've been wanting to say too woke to fail, basically.
We know how inflation has been rather rampant between 2019 and where we are now. So surely at that rate, for Vice to be sold for $400 million in 2023,
yeah,
means it's probably worth less than the $250 million it was given.
Well, Vice...
That $250 on its own would be worth...
Vice is a media company. Their expenditure isn't that high. Mm. So $250 million is a lot of money for an online media firm.
That's, I mean, even 2019 money to 2023 money Those are about the same values at the end of the day.
They're paying $400 million for something that they had $250 million injected into, which shows that it has never been a going concern.
No.
But yeah, Vice preps bankruptcy filing and $400 million sale, less than 10% of its peak valuation report. The actual report is amazing. I'll just read some of this. Struggling media company Vice Media Group is gearing up to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection and then sell itself to some of its backers for $400 million, according to a new report. So its own backers are going to buy a business they've already sunk $250 million unsuccessfully into. For what reason? It is not a profitable business. There must be something else here that these people are buying.
Yeah.
Which is the output of Vice Media, is the propaganda. And they do so via the money printer.
Yeah. Fortress Investment Group and Soros Fund Management would value it at $400 million, the Wall Street Journal reported. That would be less than 10% of its once high-flying $5.7 billion valuation back in only 2017.
That was back when you're still getting the last of the Obama loans that was still going on.
But... reps for Vice Media and Soros Fund Management declined to comment.
Fortress didn't respond to comment.
Cash-strapped Vice Media has been searching for a buyer over the past year to no avail. In February, Nancy Dubuck announced her exit as CEO after almost 5 years. The company subsequently appointed long-time execs. Under the proposed sale to senior lenders, Fortress plans to find a role for this Vice co-founder Shane Smith. What is that after he's been Me Too'd about 9 times for being a weird drunkard?
Yeah, well, the whole upshot of this is really that Vice will never go away. Just like Salon never went away.
Back to the bottom there for a sec to see what I've got. Last week, Vice Media made layoffs in its news division and said it was pulling the plug on Vice News Tonight, its nightly show on Vice TV that had previously aired on HBO. Vice Media Group's 5 main business units are Vice.com, studios, film and TV production, TV and television network, news, and creative agency Virtue.
Mm.
The company's portfolio also includes Refinery 29, the media and entertainment brand focused on women acquired in 2019, London-based Pulse Films, and ID, a digital and print style publication. So it's all garbage.
Yeah, it's basically just all garbage, but they need the garbage to stick around.
Mm.
They are garbage merchants. And this really is the point that these massive angel investments, these massive investment firms will put hundreds of millions, billions into non-functioning businesses like Vice Media in order to maintain the flow of regime propaganda. And they do so via the liquidity of the Federal Reserve. This is how the sausage gets made.
Yes.
This is the practical endpoint of kind of the Austrian malinvestment stuff, which I think goes further. You know, wrong line go up there, but...
Well, we can see malinvestment as improper allocation of resources, at least under the auspice of trying to make an economy work. What we are seeing is almost like, I don't even really have a word for it, malice investment.
It's malicious investment. Yeah. It is an investment deliberately targeted at collapsing certain parts of the financial sector and also supporting, you know, regime interest areas. It is the weaponization, the further weaponization of money, and it's the great example of it really here. I just put down, any financial institution that fails has been allowed to fail.
Mm.
You know, Silicon Valley Bank was allowed to fail as a debt trap. First Republic, whatever it was called, was basically just absorbed into the massive conglomerate that is JP Morgan.
Yes.
Credit Suisse was not allowed to fail and was bought up again by the Swiss Central Bank. So the governments worldwide, the financial institutions, have a penchant for businesses that have been doing as they're told. They are not allowed to fail. They get infinite money printed money. But it's a bit of a basic bitch point from 2008 that if you can bail out one sector, you can bail out any sector. It's just a matter of political and elite will. So you can, but to, you know, extrapolate that outwards, you can only see the allowing of a business to fail under the current circumstances, with the permanent expansion of the Fed balance sheet as a deliberate act.
Mm.
So when you see large financial institutions starting to collapse and pressure starting to be applied in certain areas, that is being done with intention.
Yes. There is. Well, that's the thing. It's managed decline.
Yes.
There are careful aspects to every single element of the collapse because they want to make sure that things that are not culturally ascendant in the way that they want them to be are collapsed. And those things that are, you know, elevated until, of course, they're no longer useful and we revert back round to some other paradigm.
It's just there is complete control here by the central finance institutions, and you can see it via the pipeline we've just described to you from the Federal Reserve to places like Silicon Valley Bank, via places like JP Morgan and the facilities that they use, that they will not allow the bad loans to go bad. Mm. Even if you're lending as, who was it who donated there? As ES90 said, cat food brand. Cat food, just disbelief. Think of the £2. But yeah, it is. It should just be disbelief. This is what's going on. This is where all the money's going. But yeah, to put a final point in that, you do not live in a market economy. You live in a total managerial economy. There is nothing outside of the whims of the central banking cartels. That is it. And you cannot survive without
very
them.
Palpatine moment. Yeah.
Proximity to the money printer and relationship with the regime is the most important factor in the survival of a corporation. We will elucidate this point in painful detail next week. We are actually going to show you the direct pipeline of money from the Federal Reserve into certain tech firms and tech ventures, which are direct fiddles, sometimes that include naked fraud. Like with Sam Bankman-Fried to support the crypto sector.
Yep.
We're actually going to be talking about WeWork and how it worked as a fiddle to support the property markets in many inner city locations as they were becoming more undesirable.
Whilst also at the same time supporting fintech companies that were engaging in digitization sort of operations in Ukraine, of all
places.
Yes,
even before total war. And just the last point there, if you are not actively being bailed out, you are replaced by a company that is. You cannot compete with a money printer. If you are an earnest business with a genuine business model, you cannot compete with somebody who effectively has infinite financial resources. That is really the big power of the infinite bailout long term. As we talk about during the democratization series, if we talk about during, you know, the progressive era, through FDR, through all of that, central banking picks winners and creates losers.
Yes.
And through doing so on a long enough scale, it is able to revolutionize the way that the economy looks, and therefore, because of money incentive, revolutionize the way society looks. And this process is only accelerating as things become wackier and the money printer, you know, prints harder. The financial collapse and reformation increases. But as Ted Kaczynski talks about, you know, you can't completely change the face of the technological landscape without changing the face of society. You can't completely change the face of the financial landscape without changing the face of society.
Well, yeah, it's the sort of obvious point, I think, and maybe the last thing we end on here, because we are running uncharacteristically long for ourselves. And
it's a Monday stream. So.
No, I know. But it's probably obvious to everybody that's listening anyway. You could not have all these complexes of leftist media and pro-immigration NGOs and all of these without this sort of economic mismanagement, or not mismanagement, but malicious management going on at the same time.
I'll put my little sad image of Gordon Brown there.
It goes to show how little they really care about certain elements of it. Because there's no price on any NGO work. All they need to do is just throw enough money at it to make sure that the people that are carrying out the work don't ask too many questions.
Yes. Really, there's quite a low bar with some of this.
And once, you know, let's say we could sort of look at it in the way that money is really just the way that power greases the wheels of the machines it uses. As long as there's plenty of money sloshing about, no one bothers to... You know, should we be doing that? Should we not be doing that? You know, is there a moral hazard here in terms of how we're investing money in something that the government supports culturally? And you know, there's all these things that people should be otherwise considering. But of course, there is none for that.
No, there is none for that.
But as you're about to point out to folk here, I think we're going to close out. And if you're looking for something to watch, I think it's something I'm definitely going to be listening to at some point during the week.
Before you go over there, I have a couple more donations. Thank you for two more donations, Gondarak. He says, all I'm hearing is that banks are more about controlling the money and not about financial advice or investments. Oh no, guys. They're not earnest businesses, but yes, an astute observation. Managerial bankers, balance sheets and balanced budgets are just a myth and they can't hurt us. That's pretty good. But thank you for your additional donations. And thank you to everyone who donated during the stream.
Thank you very much.
Thank you once again to our members. I need to read people out on one of these streams. I just never have it prepared, but I will give you guys a readout. Thank you for your regular support. It is very important. Once again, if you are around in Manchester on the 26th or 27th of May, we're not having an official event, but I will be trying to organise some informal dinners. I know a lot of you have accommodation, so we'll try and salvage something out of the No Most Manchester stuff this month. Again, thank you everyone who turns up. Thank you everyone who donates. Please do interact with the videos. Please do leave comments. Let us know if we've made any mistakes as well. As I always do, I'll be leaving the notes. I've been a little bit lax with that recently, but I'm going to go back to a few videos where I've forgotten and make sure the stream notes are in the pinned comment if you want to do your own individual research. And I put it in the chat, but if you have the time for it, or if you want to watch it later, go watch the cigar stream with Mr. Paul Gottfried, for he's one of the titans of the paleo-libertarian movement.
Especially on...
The paleo-conservative movement, sorry.
Especially on a subject like Carl Schmitt, which is something I've been reading a silly amount of. So I'd like to see what elements of it he goes into. However, I do not think he and Gottfried are going to have a 90-minute conversation about Schmitt's Nomos of the Earth.
No, I don't think they will, but... Thank you guys for watching and have a good evening.
See ya.
Thank you for doing the watchings.